same requirements for an ambulatory surgery center. They don't have to take Medicare and Medicaid patients. Now, if they go through a CON process, they're doing that because they want the Medicaid dollars. But realistically, they don't want to go out in the community and say, sorry, if you're Medicare and Medicaid, we aren't going to take you, because it's not going to be a popular message. So they're going to go through that process. But what they really want are the private insurance companies that really pay the majority of the cost, because government payers only pay about 80% of cost. Private insurance companies pay about 125% of cost. So any of us that are insured by an insurance company are subsidizing anybody that's on a government system as a government payer, whether it be Medicaid or Medicare, because of the fact that it has become so expensive. It is very difficult to pay cost when you're such a large payer. And the fact is that, you know, we're lucky. We have a young, healthy population compared to many states. And our Medicare population is very low. But it's even more difficult in those kind of communities to operate, where you are only getting Medicare reimbursement. But I guess that's one of the issues. The other is the services, and I know, Senator Green, you mentioned about the letters, and I did send a letter because I am concerned. If there was another ambulatory surgery center in Fairbanks, for example, one of the things that we're having trouble staffing our own rooms right now. Now, if there was another two rooms open, they've got to find the staff to do that. My guess is they're going to try and pay higher and take them from here. We're going to be looking for those staff, because there's just not enough in this community for any more than the number of rooms that we have right now. And we're having difficulty right now. There's where I think we need the most help, is in the workforce development.
Okay, just let's back up a minute. Sure. Now, I would have expected a letter from you. What I did not expect was a letter from the patient who signed the form on the counter at your hospital. That's the one I took exception to.
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, it happened. So, believe me. And there's some other things that where we this needs to be the departure to the conversation, because I still feel like there are ways where you all players have an obligation to play, and then there's the other whole other discussion. Has the hospital association, have hospitals as a whole, singly or whatever, chosen to provide services that are actually functions of the social service arm of the state of Alaska or of the community?
Right.
Now, have you been given that in a basket, or have you kind of taken it and said, we will provide this service because this is good stuff for our community as part of our community outreach? And that's okay.
Sure.
Then don't come back and use that as ammunition against saying somebody else wants to provide competition, and they're not going to do that option because law doesn't require it. I mean, and you may feel a moral obligation or ethical obligation, but it's not part of your charge as a hospital.
Sure.
And so we can have hospitals as a business, which they are.
Right.
Or we can have hospitals as community service providers. And so you kind of have to define who you are and what you are, and then knowing that there may be a better way to provide me the ability to go get surgery and not pay for someone to get home health care for free.
And I would agree with that statement, with the exception of small or rural communities. If you have a large urban community, that is a reasonable argument.
Yes,
when we're in a state that does not have extremely large rural market, or I'm sorry, urban, and that's the primary. We don't even have an HMO in Alaska, because there is no way to have a profitable HMO in this state. It's not at this point feasible financially to do, because we don't have a large enough population to spread the risk.
But aren't HMOs forbidden?
No.
Nobody's ever. There's been my understanding is there's been two companies that have asked for the package for licensing, and they haven't even responded. But the fact of the matter is that experts say that it takes somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 people in an HMO plan for it to be financially viable, and there's not that many people in the entire state.
Absolutely. Oh, no, I agree. No, we did pass something about 4 years ago. It was Tim Collins introduced it. What did we bring up? I mean, managed care?
No. Managed care is okay. HMOs are okay. This is Rick Johnson, by the way.
Yeah.
I my other hat is I'm an insurance agent.
Right.
So.
What was the other one we did?
But no, HMOs are not prohibited, but they're just. He's right. There just is not enough population base. Yeah.
No, we prohibited something from coming into the state of Alaska about 4 or 5 years ago. It was Tim Kelly's. Well, at least it passed through the Senate. May not have passed the whole legislature. This is strange. Why are we doing this? But I appreciate everyone's comments. Like I said, this is a good stepping off point for the point of departure for us to kind of figure out where I think I know where I stand on this, and I think I know where a lot of other people do. And there's a lot of room for agreement, a lot of room for disagreement, and a lot of room for further discussion, and that we will have. Folks, thank you. We'll see you again here at 1:30 discussing access to insurance. Let's get around. Rick Johnson.
Sure, I should be here, but
right.
I don't know where she's.
Cecil, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, is Nicole online as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Very good. And
this is Nicole.
Nicole Short, and I'm Rick Johnson.
Okay, so we will go ahead and begin this afternoon session, because we are trying to keep this as timely as possible, and we'll probably have a little more flexibility this afternoon, and then we have our wrap-up time after this. And one of the things we've been trying to do in the whole agenda here is, in spite of what I may have acted earlier today, the idea is to look at where Medicaid falls in the greater scheme of lots of things that impact costs of doing business in the state of Alaska. And seem to see the influence in the budget on some rather astronomical increases through that part of our health and social services budget. And there are a lot of things that play into it, and sometimes we don't really ever get around to talking about how those things impact Medicaid. And then on the reverse side, how Medicaid impacts other things. And one of the things that continues to come up as a discussion is the issue of access to insurance for the general population. And in the legislature and as policymakers, we're often asked to mandate coverage and to offer other things. And then in a state with a population the size of Alaska, we end up in a smaller and smaller pool of people who end up as purchasers of insurance. Therefore, we end up with more and more providers of health insurance saying this is not a very attractive market. They leave, and the price goes up, and no surprise. On the one hand, we've mandated coverage. On the other hand, we've given away coverage. We've provided more government health care through a variety of systems, right along, it doesn't matter. But yet, that pool continues to get smaller. And in the discussion we had several years ago, about really something before my time in the legislature was a sort of a single payer or premium type system, which did not go forward. And then when the advent of the Denali Kid Care CHIPS program through the feds came about, one of the conversations we wanted to have was how could we do that with a private plan understand, or we didn't get very far on that discussion, but there's currently some legislation at the federal level that may increase that program, which again increases Medicaid, which again reduces our pool in the state of Alaska, and we're on this treadmill, and we may want to be on the treadmill, or we may not to be want to, but if the feds at some point decide they aren't going to play and pay the same level they're currently paying, who picks up that difference? Once we have put a program into implemented, it's very difficult to back off from it, and therefore it becomes then the state's responsibility to pick up the slack. I'm not sure we can continue to pick up the slack if the federal government ever backs off from some of its commitment. And one of the things we know about Medicaid is that they do have a fairly unilateral ability to change how they're going to participate. With that said, we've invited, in the state of Alaska, there is already a rather unique program, and it's the CHIA program. And I couldn't help but wonder, is there some way we can talk with the CHIA folks and see if there's something there that provides an avenue for expanded health care and insurance for people who are having trouble getting access to insurance, have the ability to pay, and perhaps expand the definition of CHIA. With that in mind, we've asked them to speak to us today. What we're talking about may be totally inappropriate, otherwise it might not be fine. And as regards the cost of insurance for children, generally insurers are pretty encouraged and like covering children through private insurance, because it's a low dollar service compared to the cost, say, for me or Representative Dyson, or maybe some of you in the room. Our needs and costs are much more, except for the occasional anomaly of a child with a very, very, very serious disease. Okay, Cecil, with that in mind, do you want to speak, or do you want to have Nicole again?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Okay. Yes, maybe I can speak for a couple of minutes first and talk a little bit of historical perspective of the pool and give you some idea of what we're seeing and what some of the issues are we have, and perhaps then touch on a little bit about what you're talking about.
Okay, you would first give your name and who you were with, your title, please.
Okay, yes, I'm Cecil Bykirk, and I'm my day job is the Executive Vice President, Chief Actuary of Mutual of Omaha in Omaha, Nebraska, but I also am Chairman of the CHIA, and have been since the middle of 1994. But I have been involved with the CHIA, being at the first organizing meeting in late 1992, following the passage of the legislation. The CHIA is, I believe, been reasonably successful at providing coverage for a modest number of individuals who would have otherwise been unable to get insurance, and perhaps would have been a member of uncompensated care that takes place in the hospitals and the providers. We began issuing policies in 1993, grew to about 175 people in the middle of 1995, and then we hit a period of time for about 3 years where we leveled off, and we were just sort of gradually growing, but at a very slow rate. Then beginning in late 1998, we began to
began to grow somewhat more rapidly, and in late 2000, we started almost jumping, partly, we are not completely sure of all the reasons or all of the factors that impact us. We do know that more carriers are getting out of the individual market, not just in Alaska, but nationwide. We also know that premiums, healthcare costs, and then as a result of that, premiums are going up dramatically across the country and in Alaska as well. We're routinely seeing in the individual market premium increases of 20 to 25, in some cases 30% a year on a premium that already was fairly hefty. So we have that sort of market environment that's out there, and I think there's Alaska is obviously unique and has many unique characteristics. I think that the individual private insurance marketplace in Alaska is probably, for the most part, somewhat typical of what's going on around the country. We also, ACHEA was made the mechanism by which the state met the federal law that's commonly called HIPAA, which was attempt to provide portability to individuals who had employer coverage or church coverage or government coverage, and were losing that coverage for one reason or another. Those individuals can come into ACHEA without being a high-risk individual as a result of that approach and that legislation. So we have some people coming in under that arrangement. As I mentioned, we have had success. We're over 400 people, which we seem to be providing a service for these individuals. Every year we have an annual board meeting at which we invite people to come and testify, and those meetings have been very heartrending and positive for us in providing such coverage. On the other hand, the even though the individuals are paying a premium for their coverage, a premium that is intended to be greater than the general premium that's out in the marketplace, because that's the intent is not to compete with the private market, but to add on to the private market for those people who are otherwise uninsurable. Besides paying that premium, there's a shortfall, and that shortfall is picked up by assessing all of the insurance companies that provide major medical insurance in the state. That assessment base is limited to insured plans. Hence, employers that use self-funded plans do not contribute to the assessment. We are only allowed to actually assess on the basis of the actual insurance premiums. We currently in Alaska are assessing the carriers something around 1.5% of the premium. While on the surface this is 1.5% that the insurance carriers have to pay out, in essence it's 1.5% of additional premium that the insureds will end up paying, because they have to, in effect, pay the bill. So we have the phenomena that the healthier insured people are, to some degree, footing the bill for the uninsured. And that's the way high-risk pools work across the country, and that's how they're intended. However, the fact that Alaska has reached 1.5% in premium assessment is a concern to the board. The typically insurance carriers across the country feel that they're willing to have assessments get to about 1%. They really would feel like above that, they're really starting to add on additional premium to their customers, which the customers are already paying enough. And so that is one area of concern for us. There are areas of mechanisms that perhaps we can address. As all of you know, ERISA prevents us from assessing self-insured ERISA plans, but there are some mechanisms that two or three other states have used that have gotten around that, so that we have a broader base. Those states have a broader assessment base, in a different time, we would be happy to expand on how some of that is structured. With respect to managing the pool or managing the association, we are making every attempt to provide good coverage, but at the same time trying to manage that coverage. We've had a couple of law changes over the years, the most recent one which was to allow us to negotiate discounts in some cases for preferred provider networks. We're trying to we implemented that and we're trying to use that to further reduce our overall expenditures of our costs reimbursement, but for the services that are provided to our policyholders. So the board is fully aware of all of the costs. We do think that the CHIA has been successful. We think there are issues that we need to deal with, and just to go on just for a second further, I might add, with respect to how high-risk pools might be used to address some of the other issues that were mentioned in the introduction, some states do have subsidies for individuals who can't afford the premium, but it still allows some of those individuals with some subsidization to at least be an insured person rather than being an uninsured person in the responsibility of the state. And I'm involved with the board in Montana. Montana has passed a law that allows the board to seek funds out other than state funds to try and support low-income subsidies. We have made some inroads with the federal government. It's now questionable because of all the other things that are going on whether we're going to get some seed money for that, but I think there's possibilities there. Of course, it still comes back to, again, to the comments that were made. You know, if you're dependent on federal money, it can always be pulled out from under you, but I'll just stop there. I'd be happy to answer any questions that I might have prompted.
Come up, Rick. I have a question. First of all, did you give the what a CHIA means. It's Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Act.
That's correct.
I just want to be sure we all do that.
It's an association.
Association.
It was originally an act which created the association. So the A stands for association right now, but.
Okay. Before I have Rick Johnson here, who's joining us at the table, to talk about this, is there the ability for CHIA to be expanded to become a more, not only a high risk pool, but to have at another level the ability to have people who simply do not have insurance. They may not be uninsured, but with it, their participation plus a perhaps help from the state or however we can figure out how to do it. And again, not competing with the private sector, but having the private sector be a party to it rather than direct people to additional Medicaid programs.
I guess I think there are obviously ways that we can expand CHIA and we can embrace a number of different segments of the population. You mentioned children before. I think there are other ways that that's being taken care of. But with respect to those individuals who are uninsured, typically they're uninsured for one of two reasons, or maybe both reasons. One is that they're uninsurable. The other reason is that they can't afford the premium. Obviously, if they're uninsurable, or they're uninsurable and can't afford the premium, then a CHIA is an obvious place for them to be enrolled. And if that and that could be done by some kind of a subsidization process. If they are insurable, they're healthy enough to get insurance from the private sector, and their problem is that they don't have the money to pay for it, then my suggestion would be that somehow or other those individuals be subsidized to buy in the private market, not buy through a CHIA. A CHIA isn't really set up to manage people who are healthy. We're really set up to help people who are unhealthy. And to the extent that you would subsidize someone who is healthy to buy from a CHIA, you are in effect competing with the private market, because the private market, obviously, they're in the business to sell insurance. They want to sell insurance to as many people as they can, and they will take, obviously, anyone who's standard, who can pay the premium, and up to some level of being unhealthy, they will take people and perhaps charge them a slightly higher substandard premium. But then at some point, when they become unhealthy enough that they become uninsurable, that's basically saying the company doesn't feel like they can either charge enough or they know how to calculate the premium that they should charge, and hence they end up declining them. And that's when a CHIA steps in and has a role, in my opinion. But there clearly is that dichotomy between your group of uninsureds. You also have a small group of the uninsured who are just not interested. And for whatever reason, they think they're healthy and they don't want to spend anything for insurance or whatever. But there's always that segment out there.
Okay. Representative Dyson is here, and he had a question or a comment.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And my question may be out of order, or you may not be the person, but during this half hour we have somebody to address it. I appreciate it. A number of the nonprofit providers who contract with the state to provide services are having trouble attracting and keeping qualified staff. And an issue on that is them being able to afford health insurance for those nonprofits. So, and Karen Perdue and I and Duncan from the governor's office talked about if there was a way that those people might be able to qualify like state employees for the to get in on that health insurance program. And I think it's a good idea, but there may be a big downside to that. And that just if I would enjoy somebody who's knowledgeable to tell me if there would be indeed some negative fallout from that, maybe you could, from the private industry perspective as well.
Well, I may not be the right person to comment, but I would just throw my two cents worth in that without getting into the particulars of the Alaskan scene and the potential politics that are there that are different that I don't know about, expanding government programs, benefits that are provided to government employees as employer, as the employer would provide them to an employee, opening those up to the private market can generate some concern with the insurance industry, but by the same token, if there's no other vehicle to provide them coverage, one would have to at least think of that. But I guess I would look more toward some kind of a program, an association type program that would allow these that group of individuals to buy into some kind of an insured program. But again, I'm sure this is quite my question.
Thank you.
Rick, you may want to respond.
Yeah, I can respond to it. And I've got a couple of things here that, Cecil, I want to ask you. By the way, I am on the board of health underwriters up here, as well as on the board of the Valley Hospital in Wasilla, Alaska. And I know Nicole is also on the board, too. But just, you know, as far as the CHIA goes, because that's what you're speaking to here at this point, right now we have access only by high-risk personnel persons at this point. Is that correct?
Except for those people who would be coming in as a HIPAA-eligible or a federally eligible individual through the HIPAA legislation.
Okay. But
which basically means that if they were with an employer, that the an appropriate employer for 18 months of continuous service, they could come into a CHIA, whether they're uninsured or not.
Okay.
I mean uninsurable or not.
Okay, but and then the sort of a follow up to this, Cecil, is essentially everybody has access to health care in the state of Alaska via insurance, a CHIA, or they present to the emergency room, is that correct?
Uh,
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. Well, in general, I would say that's true. People are either insured through some mechanism.
And they can buy insurance.
Right.
Or they can go through a CHIA if they're uninsurable.
Yeah. Or they can be on
or
Medicaid.
They can present to the emergency room.
Right.
And have access to health care.
Generally very expensive healthcare.
Yeah, and it is. And it's expensive for the state of Alaska and to the hospital that has to collect.
Yeah.
Dan, I want to do a couple of follow-up things here. There's been some discussion about competition up here. And we're losing the number of insurance carriers in the state of Alaska. And I need to ask you, at this point, what we can do to rectify that situation so we can create a competitive environment for insurance companies to come up here. And that's a complex question, I know. But what can we do to create an environment so we don't have to use a CHIA, so that people want to purchase private health care plans?
Well, that's a very difficult question, and it's one I've thought about from a sort of a policy perspective in various roles that I play in my company and in the CHIA and so forth. There's a tremendous amount of pressure on insurance companies around, as I mentioned at the beginning, around the whole United States, who are in the individual major medical market. In some states, it's because the state legislation has made it almost impossible to operate. That is not the case in Alaska. Alaska's legislation in the way that Alaska, the state insurance department, or the Division of Insurance manages things, I think they make they create an environment that is not, that's not what's driving insurers away in Alaska like it is in, I'll say, New York and New Jersey and Kentucky and the state of Washington. I think what's happening in Alaska is that the number of carriers around the country are contracting. A number of carriers are getting out of the business completely. Alaska is, well, a huge state, also a small state from a population point of view. Some of the people are withdrawing from the state just because they're getting out of the market everywhere. Others might be withdrawing because they're saying we're not getting enough business that we can provide the overhead to be in this state and operate. So that's happening. I wished I had an answer to say do this and that'll solve the problem. I really don't have an answer.
Okay, I'm gonna put you on the spot one more time here.
Okay.
And there seems to be a conception of a lot of consumers, and I have over 1,500 clients here at this point in the health insurance market. And the conception is that health insurers are gouging consumers because they're making a lot of money off of this. And I'd like for you to sort of respond to what sort of income most insurers are making off from health insurance products here in the state of Alaska.
I don't know if I can limit myself to the state of Alaska, but I can tell you that as a very concrete example, my company lost over $25 million last year on individual nature medical business. And while not every company around the country is in that boat, I will tell you that there's almost no one that's making any profit or making much of any profit. If we can cover our expenses and break even, we're sort of in that holding pattern at the moment. Insurance companies are not gouging people. The fact is that healthcare costs are just skyrocketing everywhere. And I think I will extrapolate and suggest that that's the same. The same thing is true in Alaska. There's our profit margin, and when we try to price it in, is somewhere between 1 to 2, maybe 3% of gross premium. We're not covering that. We're not getting that. And I don't think there are very many carriers out there that are. And that can only go on for so long before people, companies decide that they just can't stay in the market. And, you know, my word is only, at this point, my word. I can't immediately, other than the one factual thing that I told you, I know that another company that I think is currently in the midst of withdrawing from the state of Alaska lost $50 million last year in the individual market. But beyond that, all I can say is that very few of any companies are making any money out there, and no one is gouging anybody. If we could sell the products for less, we would, because we would get more business. And we raise rates only because we have to.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony from both of you, Dyson. Is there anything else besides the increasing cost of increasingly sophisticated services, i.e. are people getting medical care that if they were spending their own money, they might not elect to do it? And then the last question that I've got to ask both of you is, what can we do to help?
Well, with respect to whether the causes, clearly we are seeing more and more sophisticated things. The last year we've seen the pharmaceutical side of it just ramp up tremendously. Cost increases due to pharmaceuticals that's a large contributor to the cost increases that we've seen in the last couple of years. Whether people are having services performed that they shouldn't if they were paying for it themselves, of course, there's always the phenomenon that a low deductible, very modest. Once people clear that, they have less stake in the game. But just to give you an example, at year-end 2000, we had 395 policyholders in a CHIA. 89 of those had a $5,000 deductible policy. 25 of them had a $10,000 deductible policy. 107 had $1,500 deductible. And our lowest deductible, $500 deductible, there were only 31 people out of 395 that purchased that plan. These people are trying to balance the scale with buying the lowest premium that they can, while recognizing that if they have expenses, they're going to end up paying out a larger deductible the lower the premium goes. So I think people are trying to do carry their end of it. One thing I do know, some states more than others, one of the things that's going on is the amount of litigation that's coming against the insurers and the pushback from people on denial of services or certifications, requests for certifications to do certain things, and carriers saying, well, that really isn't medically necessary. We are losing the battle in some of those arenas to the point where a lot of companies are gun-shy to deny a service or to push back on a claim because they're afraid they're going to get sued, and in the end, whether they're found at fault or not, the cost of just getting to that point is so great that it's easier just to pay it, go on. But there's a significant amount of that going on. At the same time, the providers, the doctors, and hospitals are in the same boat. If they don't prescribe every possible drug, if they don't try every possible technique or service, then they're potentially at risk for not having done their responsible job.
So three years ago, we passed some tort reform legislation. Did that do any good at all?
Well, again, I'm speaking somewhat in general. I don't know the environment in Alaska well enough to say whether that did or didn't. I would guess that it did.
Okay, then would you get to my last question, which is, what can we do to help?
When you say help the whole insurance environment in the state, I mean to get more carriers to stay and or to come back. And is that what you're? Or are you talking more generally than that?
Yeah, I'm talking more generally, but certainly, you know, our goal is that everybody in Alaska would have access, one way or another, to reasonable health care. And but you know, I assume government, as it inevitably does, puts some barriers, you know, to a marketplace thing working, and or charitable efforts working. But certainly on the insurance issue and all other things, tell us what to do. I've been married 35 years. I'm used to doing what I'm told.
That's hard for me to answer, and hopefully some of the Alaska residents who are there and the experts who help govern the insurance industry can cast a better framework on that with better knowing the particulars of your beautiful state that I love to visit if it wasn't for my wife. And so I think that's fairly good. There might be some things if I thought about it long enough, I could come up with to suggest maybe some promotion to carriers about the fact that they're you know, it's pretty much a wide open market. I know that in my company, I've been trying to encourage a greater presence in the state because I do feel that there's a lot of opportunity there. But it's tough. I think, you know, the one concrete thing I can say, mention, although in the big perspective of things, it's probably a nit, but with respect to CHIA, if we could somehow get a broader base of assessment, that would help keep down the amount of assessment that we have to take against each insurance premium in the state. I mentioned before the 1.5%, and it looks like it's rising. And that's 1.5% or 2% doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it really is. And I don't know the exact number, but there have been studies done about, you know, what every 1% additional premium, because all this translates back to the insurance premium. What a 1% increase in premium, and how many people become uninsured as a result of that.
Cecil, this is Rick Johnson again, and I hate to interrupt you here, but there are a couple of things that appeal to me here a little bit. CHIA is one thing, and I think, you know, the insurance companies have done their responsibilities in providing this particular program, and I want to reiterate that this is not a state-funded program. It's funded by the insurance carriers here. So, you know, we're providing coverage to the uninsurable through a mandated program through the state of Alaska at this point. And the insurance carriers are carrying the burden of cost, and that's reflected in premiums. And the other couple of things I want to just indicate to you that I think that legislators and consumers need to be aware of is that every time there's a state mandate with regard to, you know, requiring insurance companies to provide a certain service, then it is an attendant cost to everybody along the road. And those are some of the things that people aren't aware of. It sounds good, you know, to provide birth control. It sounds good to provide all of these other services. But if, you know, if the insurance companies can provide those as an option and if people want them, then they can go ahead and apply for those options, but not make it mandatory for everybody else to pay for it. And, you know, we've got mental health parity coming up here, which is a big thing, and it's on a national basis right now. And they have only estimated 1% an increase for insurance premiums for mental health parity, and quite frankly, that is way off base. And if people want to purchase that, it should be available as an option, but it should be purchased by those people that feel that they need that service or desire that service and not pass that cost along to the rest of us.
One thing I'm going to do, Cecil, I've got circled here. How did the other states get around the ERISA restrictions on creating additional sources of premium dollars?
This may get sort of technical, but hopefully I can
simplify
a little bit. But
wait a minute.
We charge a percent of the premiums charged.
Cecil, the chairwoman would like to talk for a moment.
I'm worried about our time constraint here, and I just want to say we'll get back to you on that, and that's one of the letters and the questions we'll ask to get to you. But I definitely think we need to figure out how, if the other states can do it, can we do it? And I do want to say for the record, that's one of the reasons that I opposed the state becoming self-insured, because it took the entire state of Alaska employees out of the pool paying for the insurance premium that the state legislature, before Fred and I got there, said that the premium fund, the premium tax, would pay for. And I thought that was a very, very deceptive thing to mandate it, that all insurers paid for this and then exempt yourself. I thought that was very deceptive. Anyway, they took a big pool and a big touch out of the people paying for that premium. And it is going to create and continue to create payers of very, very, very small companies at very large amounts. So, but one of the things I want to discuss somewhat is this issue of, if we have this pool of uninsured people, and the inclination is to either mandate coverage and our giveaway services or put people in Medicaid. And every time we do that, we continue to lower the pool of insurable people. And particularly on the issue of, say, children insurance. If we had the ability to go back and start having a conversation to convert to another plan and make it part of a private pool, and having people and having the state participate to the same extent it is currently, and having the state participate in the premium of the favor, but since it's not a federal Medicaid program, we could allow a copay, we could allow premium participation, we could allow participation in the choice of who your insurer is, and get people not talking to government about it, but talking to a private person out there and being in a mode for continuing in that versus saying, oh, I've got to go to government to get my health care. That's the fault. It's not that it's wrong necessary for government to help with the premium. It's wrong for government to be the source of health care. Literal health care. Hospital, whatever you want to say. And so is there out there a mechanism by which you could bring, well, what currently there's 70 to 20,000 children in the Denali Kid Care?
Yeah, and I understand the Denali Kid Care, the federal funding is going to be diminishing here and almost disappearing. And then, is the state of Alaska going to pick up then the cost of Denali Kid Care?
I'd be loath to say that the state could ever pick up that entire share. But I'm not sure on what basis or what tracking on. The feds to cut out their coverage.
Well, you know, my inclination here at this point is that if we had some sort of needs-based program that some folks could pursue at the state level to be able to provide funding for private insurance. Mm-hmm. And for those folks that are, you know, working, but they can't quite afford health insurance coverage, but be able to fund a private health plan, at least a safety net program. Mm-hmm. So they're not a burden on the system. I would like to see something like that happen.
Okay, do you think that could be segued into something that worked for not all children, but for, say, young people?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't. But we've got these hard and steadfast rules right now with regard to Medicaid and income levels, and, you know, either you're in or you're out.
Mm-hmm.
No. What do we do?
Yeah. Can you work with us on this?
I would be more than happy to work with you on this.
Good. Because that's where we need to be, because there's still a whole other pool of people out there who will never qualify for Denali Kid Care, don't want to qualify for Denali Kid Care, they too share our inclination that they may not want to go to government for Medicaid coverage, but they would love to be assisted in getting private insurance.
But there's something in between.
Okay.
And quite a few of those folks are the very ones that we've been talking about the last 2 days who we need to help us provide child care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and senior care, and you know, and lots of the services that our nonprofits are providing for handicapped children with developmental disabilities, and they are, in some senses, not being able to get health care, for what keeps some of those people from providing the very real other human services that we need, because they got to look after, take care of their family. So.
Now, is the person online, Nicole, is she an associate of yours in your organization?
No, she is on the board of the Alaska Association of Health Underwriters.
Okay, Nicole?
Actually, this is Nicole Serena.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead and introduce myself.
Go ahead.
Actually, with Aetna, I'm an account executive in Seattle, Washington.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Actually, most of my comments have already been made by Mr. Johnson and Cecil, but I think they're extremely important points. I think one of the pieces is looking at those individuals who do not qualify for Medicaid, yet cannot afford the cost of individual coverage, limiting their access to health care. You know, one thing that we've looked at or was also mentioned is forming associations of small groups to kind of band them together to let them access more affordable health care in some type of larger group association. One thing you do, you know, looking at small groups is the downside may be some anti-selection. You know, those that really do need the care are going to be accessing it versus those that may not need it or feel they don't need it and, you know, can't justify the cost, especially if it's, you know, 20% of their total income earnings, if they're only making anywhere from $8 to $10 an hour.
Well, you know, you've heard Rick's response to the request about kind of being a sort of an advisor and kind of helping with it. Is that something you guys might be interested in doing with Nicole?
Definitely, Senator Green.
Okay, good. I think maybe we need to get a list of people that we need to contact and see how what we can get to work up and bring back. Before session, if possible, during session, otherwise,
okay.
At least get the conversation started, because I am very, very, very concerned, because this is one of the drivers of Medicaid increases, and until we figure out how to alleviate and set people's minds at ease so that they have, and you know, a lot of people want to participate. There was a woman I was talking to out there on the phone yesterday, she said, I'd love to be in it. My family could afford X number of dollars a month. We don't want to, you know, but we can't afford for everything. And I would much rather help her than I would to pay into the Medicaid program. And the larger you get a pool, not a diminishing pool that you only access and get into when you're in time of need or whatever, but on the other hand, then there has to be some kind of penalty is probably the wrong word, but accountability for that person who chooses not to get into that, who chooses not to make provision for health care or to be, you know, have a sustainable income to support themselves, and even say, well, you didn't avail yourself of what's available. Now, how are you going to opt in? But anyway, we'll work on that later. And we are at our shutting down time. Cecil, do you, either you or Nicole have anything else you want to add before we shut down for the day?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to chat and give my thoughts, and obviously I'm very willing to participate in any way that I can to help.
Well, I really appreciate you guys being taking the time to join us today, because this is obviously a major part and a big piece of what's happening with this particular segment of the budget in Alaska, as well as in other places. And there has to be an environment that says there's a place for an urgency for people to have certain sort of attachment to their health care, as we support ourselves. Are you finished?
I'm done, unless you want some sort of anecdotal story that I have to tell. But
well, if you would like to tell your anecdotal story after Greg says something, go right ahead.
What good story is. Okay. Have you told us all the things we can do to make the situation better?
Actually, you know, we do have limited access up here, and the number of carriers that we do have available in the state of Alaska are extremely limited, and I want to make sure that we have competition up here, because I do have some concerns as a broker, health insurance agent in the state of Alaska.
What do we do?
Foster an environment that wants to encourage other state mandates is one thing.
Get rid of the state mandates?
Well, I'm not sure getting rid of them, but at least making them, you know, different than what they are right now.
Is it optional?
Optional stuff rather than requirements. Optional rather than requirements.
Okay, but that's an oxymoron.
That means
there's a difference between a mandate and an optional offering. And what you say is, we want you to provide, as an insurance carrier, we want you to provide birth control pills. We want you to provide chiropractic. But when you start mandating it, then it spreads it out amongst everybody else. Those people that may have the need, then they can pay the extra cost.
Okay. All right. So how about the tort reform thing? We all know that most providers do lots of defensive things. My doc thinks it's 30-40%, but do we need to do more with tort reform?
Well, I I've got a personal opinion on this, and personal
yes
opinion
no.
is yes.
Okay, tell us what to do. All right, how about the the things that people are getting care that they wouldn't really need if they were paying all themselves? Anything to do on that?
Give me an example. I mean, what do you?
Would a copay help?
A copay would be great, and I think a copay on Medicaid would be great, higher than what we have right now. And you're talking about, and this again is my personal opinion. My personal opinion is, you got people standing in line for a carton of cigarettes, and they only have to pay a $5 copay when they go to the doctor's office, and they're the same people. If they can afford to pay for that, then they can afford to pay a higher copay on Medicaid. That's my personal opinion.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, we will definitely be talking to you. Okay. That will close out the formal presentation of our speakers. And there's some folks here who have signed up to testify. Linda?
I don't really need to. I provided you with the packet.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay. Oh, Linda thinks that she had provided us with the packet, and that will be part of the report that goes out. So thank you very much. Okay.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Bob Lord, Division of Insurance. I just wanted to make sure that you got the one-page fact sheet.
Bob. I didn't realize you were online. Did you have any comment?
Well, sure, but I don't want to extend
your time. Oh, we have nothing but time, Bob. We always want to hear from the Division of Insurance.
All
You bet. I did not realize you were online, so go right ahead.
Thank you. I did provide a one-page fact sheet, which does incorporate the division's results from the 2000 survey of health insurance. This is that it was mandated by amendment to statute last year, as Representative Roper insisted. And for the 2000 survey, there's one insurer, that's Blue Cross, that writes almost 90% of the individual health insurance in Alaska. And then Mutual of Omaha, from Mr. Biker's company, writes about 9%. This simply supports the point that you've heard made repeatedly in the last hour, that the market is highly concentrated. It's characterized by a lack of competition for the individual health market. For the small employer market, there are three insurers that write more than 85% of the insurance in this market. That's Blue Cross, Principal, and Aetna. Overall, it's fair to say there's a very limited choice of insurers and health plans. There are barriers to writing health insurance in Alaska. I'm responding to questions that were raised by committee staff earlier. And Senator, the outline that you gave at the beginning of this presentation was right on the money. So I won't reiterate that. But basically, it's a small, remote population. Administrative costs are very high. It's a widespread population. Overall, to put it in perspective, we are less than 0.2% of the indemnity market in the United States. It's hard to establish relationships and contracts with health insurance, health care providers. So getting preferred providers and that kind of thing is even more expensive and more risky for insurers to write up here. I just throw in one political comment. Things like Senate Bill 37 that would allow collective negotiation by doctors are emphatically not part of the solution, in my opinion. It would make things worse, not better. But nationally speaking, as well as within Alaska, the insurers are pulling out of the individual and small group markets because they're simply not profitable for them. The numbers that Mr. Biker provided earlier, I think, support this point, although those were more general figures that he gave. What are the barriers to purchasing health insurance by Alaskans? Of course, there's a GF coverage for uninsurable Alaskans. It's been an extremely successful program. And I would like to just take a moment to recognize and to thank Mr. Biker for his leadership and involvement in this program. He's doing that as a volunteer. He's been involved with the program since day one. And I just think we're extremely fortunate in the state to have individuals of his caliber that choose to be involved in our program. It's been a very successful program as a result of the involvement of his and other board members. All the Alaskans would be able to purchase coverage in the standard market, but their choices are limited to basically two insurers, and many are simply not able to afford those premiums. Cost is the driver here, and you've identified already that there are people outside of Medicaid that still cannot afford the health insurance. What can be done? Approach this question with some caution. There's been a reluctance to identify that, and there are no simple answers. But according to the most recent census data, and this is simply a sample, it is not an actual count, so there's some reliability questions to it. But the U.S. Bureau of the Census concluded that approximately 19% of Alaskans in the year 2000 were uninsured. And that's a number that has grown somewhat from previous years. Lack of affordability is the key reason why that's the case. Well, what are the possible solutions? There's no free lunch in health insurance, as with anything else. If there are direct or indirect premium subsidies or other assistance programs are essential. I think the general comments that I've heard from you that the private sector, the private insurance market is the best way to provide those is certainly the case. Programs that reinforce the private market are far preferable to government-run programs. possibly creating a pool for lower income individuals and small employers currently without insurance, and subsidizing the premiums or providing funds to cover the excess losses of the pool. Mr. Bykerb touched on a couple of specific CHIA-type mechanisms that could assist. Right now, that premium assessment, the assessment rising to the level of 1.5% of total health insurance premiums that are subject to that assessment, is a serious concern, because Representative Dyson, as you mentioned yesterday, having the cost of the uninsurable paid by the healthy is kind of a death spiral in a way. And when you get to the 1.5% level, you're really seriously influencing the cost of health care for everyone, which drives companies out of the market. It's not being avoided, it's simply being paid by a very limited sector of the market. And if there isn't some way to broaden the base of that assessment, and there are a number of models out there that have proven very successful in other states, I believe it would be well worth the committee time to examine those, and we would pledge to cooperate with any kind of effort to explore alternative mechanisms to the direct assessment on individual health insurers. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Bob, for the good presentation. And I think you can tell from what we were saying, we're going to have some work to start on. And hopefully we can get somewhere on this. And sometimes these things take more than 1 year, but we need to get discouraged and we'll just keep plugging away. Yes, Representative Dyson.
I was looking through some stuff my staff had given me, and apparently President Bush is talking about tax credits for people who are making contributions to their own health insurance and so on and so forth. If your colleagues decide to come up with fiscal policy that includes more taxes, I will sure encourage them to allow tax credits, for anybody that is contributing to their own health care insurance.
I think you might be looking at the wrong person. But, one thing that I did have notes down on earlier that talking about how things are going to come down from the federal government is it, and I'm not sure exactly what the proposal is now. It's sort of an expansion of the kids' care to go out and include the family and move forward to include parents, which is just exactly the opposite of what is going to bring about any long-term solution in this state. And I think we can invest our money where that money is going to assist people locally and require involvement locally and do something that gets people into private coverage versus Medicaid. Then, I don't know how you call the Congress and say, okay, so I'm insure all the adults in the world, because there are ones going to be supporting it, except a few of us. But anyway, it's one of the things that compounds the problem of affordable insurance coverage for those people who don't qualify for Medicaid. And it makes the problem 10 times worse, because it again takes out a big segment of the insurance market, or the pool of people we can call on, even to ask, can we help you buy insurance? Why would you do that if you can get some free from the kids? I mean, it makes no sense to me at all. But anyway, that's okay.
Mayor, if I might offer one final thought.
Go ahead.
Thank you. You heard yesterday from the Denali Commission, and I thought that was an excellent presentation.
Okay.
I believe that they indicated their mandate had been amended to focus on health facilities funding recently. Consider the possibility with Senator Stephen McCloud, which remains there even with a Democratic takeover of the Senate, because he's very good buddies with Senator Byrd, I think.
Sure.
If their charge were further amended to add the next step, as they talked about, of say going to health program funding and dealing with some of the kind of intractable problems that we've just discussed, you then have some financial resources from the federal government with an Alaska-specific solution being developed. and it might provide some real possibility of putting two and two together.
Yeah, Bob, maybe we could get staff together and work on language on that. Does that work? Can I get you to help with language?
Certainly, be happy to try to do that.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Again, we're back to some folks who are here and around the state who have something to testify. And I'm going to ask you to limit your comments to a very brief time as we are fast approaching the bewitching hour. Is this Marjorie Linder? Linder? Oh, hi.
Hi.
Okay. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Can you say your name and who you represent, please?
I'm Marjorie Linder, and I represent myself.
Okay. Welcome,
Okay. Tomorrow is my 57th birthday, so to announce that means that I am in real bad trouble.
You have a very wonderful ego, I tell you.
All right. And as a result, I received a birthday present from my health insurance company just this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a notice from them that as of December 15th, I will be paying $830.88 a month for in premiums for a policy with a $2,500 deductible. And that's an increase in rates since May of 2000 of $293.57.
And I assume there's been no change in your conduct or health?
There's absolutely, now I'm going to get into that too. Absolutely. It's not related to that, and they agree that it is not related to that. It is not me. And in fact, these rates here are more than my daughter pays for rent. They're more than I, they're my second highest cost of monthly cost, my first being my mortgage. And they're twice as high as my food costs. So you can see this is a real problem. By the time I pay my premiums and my $2,500 deductible, I have paid $12,470.56. That means I have to have health care costs, huh?
Annually.
That's right. So this is a real problem for people that have been ripped and are self-employed like myself. I'm self-employed. I've been contributing to this state since 1978 as a self-employed person. I have faithfully paid all my bills to Mutual of Omaha. And I am, in really a tough situation. I've taken shortcuts. Just to answer your question, I get my internist to prescribe for my asthma over the telephone. And when I go to my gynecologist, I ask him for anti-inflammatories for my shoulder. So I am really trying to limit the amount of health care. I'm certainly not one of those people that are there, you know, just gouging the system or anything like that. In fact, I'm too busy working to pay for this whole thing to access it. And even if I could access it, I don't know that I could afford it. I could not afford to pay additional health care after doing all this. And last year, just to add insult to injury, after I had done all this, my health care policy said to pay $1,000 or $2,500. I paid my $2,500, and they're supposed to pay 100%. I had my shoulder surgery. I broke down. I had a shoulder surgery, and they declined to pay 40% of what of the bill. So that's just an example of the, I hate to say it, but the rape of this system on people like you who are trying to be and act responsibly. So now this is what is very important to understand here, and I didn't really realize this until I got going. And it all began when a former company, Principal Mutual of Omaha, Principal Mutual suckered me into a particular pool at a reasonable rate in 1993. Now, I don't remember what that was, but I can tell you that in May of 1996, I paid only $188.13 a month. In April of 1997, I paid $226 when Mutual of Omaha came on board, and they closed their pool. And what is important to know is that these pools are time sensitive. They're just for a couple of years. You get in, and you get into a and then they close your pool, and your pool moves up, and the pool decreases in size. So they're the ones that are defining these small pools. The insurance industry is doing that. It's not like, you know, I'm electing to get into a small pool. And the, like, for instance, if you read the Blue Cross rates and they say, oh, I can get in at $335 a month or something, that's if I'm a completely, totally healthy person with no pre-existing conditions. And that's only for a short period of time because they're going to be raising my rates, you know, in a very short order, just like they have. In fact, if you look at it, my bills have gone up, my premiums, since 4 of 96, this is in, that would be in 5.5 years. My bills, or my premiums have gone up 441%. 441%.
More than your gross business has gone up.
Wow, and hey, lots more than the insurance premium history. I, for instance, pulled this off the web. This comes from Alaska Economic Trends, and I want to direct you to it. And in that particular thing, in the June edition, June 2001, on page 7, it has the percent of change from the previous year for medical care. So what I did is I prepared for you these particular things right here. And in this particular, this is my premium history. And what it shows is, in a year in which the percent of in medical care costs changed 2% in Alaska from what it was before, my premium was driven up 30%. In a year in which the percent of change was 4.3%, my premium went up 41% from the previous year. And so I'm really trying to say that there's something rotten in Denmark. There is some problem here that we have in this particular state that makes this so really unfair, unaffordable, and all the business. There, as hard as I try and as hard as I work, there is not much of a way that I can really afford to keep going. So what I'm going to do is I'm being priced out, so I am able to go to Achaia. Achaia has become the dumping ground for folks like me. And I'm kind of the walking wounded. I'm not really that bad. I have never in 1 year spent more than I paid in and the deductible. I mean, I really haven't. As I say, I'm just too busy working to pay for this.
To get sick.
I can't get sick, and it scares the heck out of me if I do. Because how in the world am I going to be able to afford this? I've done everything to be a responsible person, but I don't see how I'm going to keep going, you know? So what happened is Mutual of Omaha, why they cavalierly invited me to, just shop in the open market. So I tried. I really tried. And I found out that in Alaska, there really is no open market. You've got to kind of be perfect. And a perfect specimen with no illnesses ever, you know. In fact, the Blue Cross form that I had to fill out to get this at Chia asked me, have I ever had these things? Ever. And if I've ever had anything, I imagine I'll get a rider on that particular problem.
For you?
No, for Blue Cross. I have to apply to Blue Cross to get a CHIA because I'm a self-insured person. And unlike, say, a state employee or somebody like that who went to a CHIA from that, a group plan, they would be, or an employer-sponsored plan or whatever, they wouldn't have to wait 6 months. But I've got to wait 6 months for my pre-existing conditions to be covered by a CHIA. So I am going to do it because it's all a better deal. But I'm just letting you know how this whole thing works. And that these things are, that the main thing is that these pools are time sensitive, and that the insurance industry by itself is limiting and reducing the size of this pool because this is how they make money. And so it's really, I'm not trying to say I'm a private person, and in fact I'm paid by insurers for what I do in my business. But I am trying to say that there is there is something wrong. My business, I certainly have, and since 1978, I have given it two raises. My bills have been up about 30%, not 441%. So I know that I'm not contributing to this. Anyway, I'm imploring you to preserve a CHIA because I understand, like they said, the number of insurers paying into it has been greatly reduced. And your point was really well taken. When the state abandoned it, they really just undercut it so badly. We've got to do something. And so I'm also wanting you to consider a way that we can have bigger pools of people like myself that are not time sensitive and are not age related, because this is sort of an ageism problem too. And the reason it is, and what they've done and so forth, that you can see, I've presented you another thing, and that's this news release on these tax credits and whatnot. And what they're finding is that the individual health coverage is not working very well for folks in the 50 to 64 year old age group. And so that's a real problem.
Yeah,
it's not, and neither
people who are currently covered under a plan at their work.
At their work, right, in the individual policy market, like I am, right. And you're exactly right. And then the another fact that was interesting here is it said that the median cost for 15 cities surveyed was $6,000 a year for a 60-year-old. And at 57, I'm going to be paying $10,000 a year here in the state of Alaska. So we're in trouble, and I'm hoping that you all can come up with some solutions.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that was one thing that on the conversation we were trying to have with people, was to see if there was any way without compromising the plan that's currently existing, if there are tweaks that need to be made to that for people who were uninsurable or quasi.
Are you talking about with the CHIA, or
with
are you
CHIA,
talking
yeah.
about with mutual vulnerable?
No.
There's a big difference.
No.
I have some ideas to tweak them, I can tell you.
Well, I'm sorry, because it's a legally rated show.
Can I just respond to this? Being an insurance agent and
sure.
broker, there's a lot of people that don't understand, and I don't mean to denigrate anybody here in this room at all, but they don't understand the concept of insurance. And the insurance concept is not what you use, it's spreading of risk.
I understand.
Okay, in my office alone, I've had a $1.2 million claim. I have had an $800,000 claim. When you spread that
sure.
out, no, these
gone,
no. These are this is during my life, during
okay.
the life of my office here at this point, last 10 years. So a $1.2 million claim. We have to spread that out amongst everybody else. And we had an $800,000 claim last year. This is health insurance alone. This was not the older generation. This was these were unborn premature deliveries that we ended up having to pay for. So what happened is that those costs end up getting spread amongst everybody else. And it's not what you use, but it's what everybody else uses, and then they have to spread that cost amongst everybody.
I know that, but I don't even have maternity insurance, and I don't know why, but I don't.
But you're still paying that cost.
But they don't offer me maternity insurance, and it is not even among the things that I'm doing is what I'm trying to
but
say.
But if the insurance company is insuring these other individuals out there,
they're not offering insurance. They will not offer on this plan. They do not offer.
I understand, but it's part of the whole insurance concept. You're spreading the risk.
Okay, what are the phrases that
And I feel for you, I really do, because I have, my clients are, you know.
Yeah, but you're, really, $830.88
okay.
is just
so unbelievable. What are the phrases that the two libraries of the two things that impact what's happening in the world of insurance, and one is the actual incidents, the number of incidents, and the experience of whatever it is. And it's an incredible exponential climb, you know, and unfortunately, and I don't know how. Anyway, if we can figure out how to work with them, then I'll be happy to.
Right, just to get the pool smaller. To get the pools
we've got several people to go, so.
Yeah,
well,
let me get out of the way here.
Sure. Yeah, and I was just going to, if it's okay, I'd like to ask Margie, because Margie and I both have been self-employed during the same period of time, the last 3 years, but, and Margie had some ideas, and I we've been asking people how we can help, and if there's people who have as much time in looking for solutions, what would you do?
Well, I don't know whether this is workable and so forth. I would say this. I would try to find a way to have a large pool of self-insured or self-employed people and in other words, have a great big group plan of people that we can buy into. I'm not asking the state to subsidize me even, but if it was a bigger group and it was less, it was not time sensitive, and it was not so age sensitive, that would really help. And the state's plan, for instance, is not age sensitive or time sensitive, and it's fed by new young people all the time, and that kind of thing. And it
works.
We may
be able to address part of your hopes and desires. I don't think we'll be able to get away from bracketing age experience and history that occurs while you're in the field. That impacts what future rates you're going to be. And there will always be fluctuations in rates.
But it's not related to my particular history. It's related to the history
of the
group.
If you're in the pool, it's related to the history.
It's of the whole group, yeah.
The whole group.
Because
your history.
My history certainly is not what is feeding this rise.
But it's going to impact, everyone's history impacts the history of the whole.
That's right.
The forecast for the whole.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, we can't figure out how to erase the truth or the actual occurrence. And so,
I know.
Appreciate your information.
Thank you.
And I certainly would have to say she deserves an A plus for her report. She did a very good job on her report. Okay. Rod Wilson, did you wish to testify?
I'd like to say a couple words, ma'am.
If you would please just come up so they can catch you on the microphone, please.
Greetings, Rod.
Hi.
How are you?
My name is Rodman Wilson. I'm a retired internist. I practiced internal medicine for a long time in Anchorage and then ran the health department in the 80s when Governor Knowles was mayor of Anchorage. During many of those years, I studied healthcare financing. A little bit out of touch with it now, but this pricked up my ears when I heard about this, and I think it's a shame that as a nation we haven't figured out how to take care of everybody with respect to their health care. Almost all the other industrialized nations have done so, as you know. Not that their systems in Canada or Germany are perfect. They have their lumps, but by and large, their citizenry is happy with the way things are. Just ask the Canadian. And it's a shame that Alaska, since the nation is not going to do it, it's a shame that Alaska doesn't figure out a way to take care of everybody's health.